Mr. Newman, Reel 5. We were talking about your time at Aldershot Barracks after you joined the Fife and Fofar unit yeomanry. Anything else about that?
Well, the barracks I didn't like, as I told you before. They were old, they were uncomfortable, they were unpleasant. But being at Aldershot itself suited me very well, because I only lived at Eastleigh, about 15, 20 miles down the road, and as we were preparing our tanks for the invasion, which we all knew was going to come off then, we were working pretty well daytime only, and the evenings weren't very much for ourselves. So I used to be able to hop on a train at Aldershot Station, go down to Eastleigh and come back later on that night, having seen my fiancé then. And I used to be able to do it on two platform tickets. So it was extremely convenient.
You didn't pay the proper fare, though.
Oh, no. Two platform tickets, one going, one coming back. Buy one tomorrow for you to get off at Eastleigh next day. And that was very good, and it went on for about 6 or 7 weeks. As I said, we all knew the invasion was coming, and that's what we were preparing for.
Were you nervous about it at all?
About the invasion?
Well, of being in action.
Oh, obviously, I think everybody must be a bit nervous about it. In some ways, we were looking forward to it, because it was... I mean, that's what we've been preparing for such a long time. I was lucky a little bit than some of the others because I had seen a little bit of action in North Africa. Not very much, but a little bit. And so I knew a little bit more about it than some of the other people did. But I don't think anybody's really afraid of it.
So the next thing would be the move near Gosport. But you,
well, no, not for me.
Not for you, yeah. What happened?
As I said, I'd come in and I was really super numerary. And there are quite a lot of us who've come to the unit who were really excess baggage. We had no real jobs there. And we well realised that we were there as reinforcements. When we got to France, if something went wrong, we were there to fill some of the holes. And we knew that was what it was for. And I think this applied to every unit which was going to the invasion, not just us. We left about four tank crews from the 504th Germany, four tanks and the crews were detached from the regiment and sent away together with reserve crews from every other regiment. And we went to Eastbourne. And I went as a tank commander, acting unpaid lance corporal, just for the crossing. I'd never been a tank commander before, or had been in a tank before. And we went down to Eastbourne, just outside Eastbourne, where we joined up with the third tanks, with, you know, with the extra reinforcements for the third tanks, for the Hussars, for the Guards Armoured Div. There must have been about 100, 120 tanks down there, who were not going over with their regiments, but were going over later to act as reinforcements. And we stayed at Eastbourne for, what, about 2 or 3 weeks, possibly a little longer.
Did you actually have any tanks with you, or do any training?
Oh, yes, we had our tanks, but we didn't do any training. We'd done the training, we had the tanks, we were just waiting to go.
But you hadn't done any training as a tank commander?
Only in as much as we all had a little bit of training as tank commanders. But I wasn't going to be a tank commander in action. I was only there to take the tank over on the invasion, and then it's going to be handed to somebody else. We, none of us, were really doing our proper jobs, except possibly the drivers. I know that the gunner, the bloke who went over as a gunner with us, was just another driver. He wasn't a gunner. But he took the place of the gunner in the tank. And we went down, and as I said, we went down, there must have been 100, 120 tanks from all of the tank regiments waiting to go over. And we went to Eastbourne, as I said. And once again, that suited me very well. because my father's family lived in Sussex, in a place called Shoreham. And so I managed to see quite a few relatives while I was there. Then we went from Eastbourne, along the coast, to a village called Swanwick in Hampshire. And we were billeted around, we just were parked around the village. About 100 and some odd tanks again. And there was a huge camp just outside the village with all of these reinforcements waiting to air across. Went there, we weren't just for tanks, we had also infantry reinforcements and artillery reinforcements, all waiting to go over to fill in their own regiments as needed. And once again, that was only, 10 miles from Eastleigh, my hometown. And so, although we were confined to barracks, Eastleigh had provided a grammar school for most of Hampshire. And so a lot of the youngsters from Swanwick going into Eastleigh every day to go to school. And through those, I was able to keep in touch with my family, my mother and father, and with my girlfriend. And so we were getting messages back and forwards, and they knew I was all right. And while we were there, the invasion came over. The other wireless, of course, my family would have been worried. They wouldn't, because they knew that that's what we were preparing for. But they were lucky, they knew that I was all right, and I was Swanwick, and nothing happened to me. And about a week, 10 days after the invasion, we went on down to a little village, even nearer Eastleigh, called West End. It's now a suburb of Southampton. And we parked all our tanks along the main road. And by sheer coincidence, my tank was parked outside my uncle's house. So I just got out, went across the road, and like, once again, got the message onto my family. And the family came out to see me. Everybody wondered how they knew I was there. And they came out that evening to see how all was.
This is East End.
Okay, they came from Eastleigh. I was at West End.
West End, yeah.
Which is only 5 miles away from Eastleigh. And they came out to see me. And everybody wondered how they knew I was there. But we were only there for one day. And the next day we went on to Southampton. Embarked at the pierhead at Southampton. And went across to Normandy.
Now, what did you embark on?
Landing craft tank. LCTs.
Didn't you know the number? And when was this?
That would have been on the 12th or 13th of June. 12th, 13th or 14th of June. I'm not sure the actual date. It was a Sunday.
So that's just after the regiment itself had gone out?
Around about the same time, yes. I think we were. We actually got there before the regiment, I believe. Mind you, but you must remember, we were all of the reinforcements there were for many regiments. Many of the regiments there had been there since D-Day. Some of those were D-Day landings. All the reinforcements went out together, not just the 5th and 4th.
And what do you remember of embarking? I presume you took your tank aboard,
yes,
you know, and how is it all stashed away on the ship tank?
It's a bow opening ship, and goes very like a modern open, you know, ride-on ferry, except it only opens one end. So we had to back the tanks in, reverse the tanks into the ships, so we could drive off. They were waterproofed. And there was we drove those straight over the middle. I think it took about 12, 14 tanks, one behind the other. And I remember I was the last but one tank on, so I would have been the second tank off. We had a peaceful crossing going across. No problems, it was calm. quite sunny. And when we got to the beaches, we just drove off. We were a bit worried as we drove off, because we landed in about 6 or 7 foot of water, and we had to drive ashore.
Was there any problem with that?
No, everybody's a bit worried about it, because we didn't know how good the waterproofing was. But no, there wasn't any problems. We got ashore right. We got up on tanks, blew the exhausts off so that we weren't cluttered with those, and drove on. And when that night we got about 1 mile, 2 miles away from the beach, and we parked around a large field. And we spent the night taking all the waterproofing off.
Was that difficult?
No, it was fairly easy. It was time consuming, and it was dirty. But it wasn't difficult at all. A lot of the stuff came off very easily, the putty stuff. It just peeled off. The black watery paste was more difficult, because I had to be cleaned off with spirit. But it came off all right.
And whereabouts were you? Do you know any of the names of the villages?
No. We weren't anywhere near a village at all. We were about 2 miles down off the beach, and we were about to park in a large orchard.
And this was the whole of these reinforcement drafts.
Yes.
And which beach had you landed on?
I haven't a clue. I think it was our mansion, but I'm not sure. We just went where we were told. And we went to this farmhouse, and we were surprised, rather, because we didn't know what to expect from the French. And when we got there, we found the farmer in the farm where we were parked, seemed to resent us being there. And we thought we were liberators. We thought we'd be pleased to see us. And then we realised, of course, they hadn't been troubled much by the Germans. The people in the towns had, and the people in the villages had. But the individual farmers stuck in the country, they'd just been left to get on with their own business. And we were just intruders, like the Germans had been intruders. Anyhow, we stayed there for a few days. Gradually, a few tanks would go away to go to their own units. And after about 3 or 4 days, we left to go on down to the 5 and 4 of us.
Now, where were they when you joined them?
This was coming towards the end of June then, and we were outside Caen. Don't know the name of the place, and to be honest, I can't remember very much of those next few days. The first real remembrance I have of that time was when there was a 1,000-bomber raid on Caen. I mean, it'd be easy enough to find the date of that. And we just captured Hill 112 again. And we were at the top of it. I and other members of the 5 and 4 for Yeomanry, these squadrons, were parked up on the hill. And we were on top of the hill looking down on Caen and watching these thousands of bombers circling around, going down, dropping their bombs, flying away again. And they seemed to be dropping them from below our level. We seemed to be looking down on the bombers even.
And when you rejoined the unit, were you joining B Company again?
I went back to B Squadron again.
B Squadron, sorry. And were you going back as an electrician? And were you supernumerary still?
There was still another electrician in B Squadron, but we tend to work together. There wasn't much work for us to do, because the tanks had been well maintained, and it was merely a question of just checking over every night, making sure that everything was still working. There were very few repairs to do. There were very few repairs which we could do.
what state was the Union in? Unit in? Had it been in action?
It had been in action.
It's after Epsom, isn't it?
Yeah. It had been in action, and we had lost some drivers. That's the real reason why we went back, because the tanks were needed.
But you weren't needed as a tank commander, yeah. What state was the unit? It had suffered losses, quite heavy losses. I mean, were you aware of any change in just the general feeling of the unit, or any of your friends gone?
No. At that time, I hadn't lost any friends. People were less excited than they had been before. I think it had come as a shock to many of them to find out that people were firing back. When you tend to go and attack, you tend to think everything's going to go well. And you don't think there's going to be reverses. And I think when you suddenly realised that people were going to get killed, people were going to get injured, and it had come a bit of a shock to some people, and they were far more realistic about it than they had been. And although I don't say they were worried, they were a little more apprehensive than they had been. I personally didn't lose any friends until July. Oh God, I'm going to date July the 18th at Cornwall. When a bloke...
Well, we'll come to you, yeah.
Who had a bloke I had, who I was friendly with, got killed. And that was the first one of my friends to really get killed. Lance Corporal Anderson.
So, you saw this 1,000 bomber raid. What else was happening?
Well, as I said earlier on, at least I think I said earlier on, when you're in tanks, you don't go forward as a unit, as a whole regiment. You go forward as a squadron. And within the squadron, even the troops could be separated and going out as individual units. So there was never a time when everybody was eight. Was not there. There was always somebody was always about. No, somebody was always around, even if it was only the support stuff like us. Or the soft vehicles, the supply vehicles. There's always somebody about. You were never completely alone. I think with sometimes the tank crews felt they were on their own. Because as I said, when you're in a tank, the five members of that tank crew, they lived together, they slept together, they did everything together. And they tended to be the basic unit. Similarly, when with us, the fitter troop tended to be the basic unit, and you spent more time with other people in the fitter troop than you did with anyone else. Similarly, the drivers and the supporting people from the transport, the wagon drivers and things like that, they tended to spend more time with the other drivers, rather than with fitters or with tank crew.
So what's the next thing you remember?
We did know that they were eight, and we did know that it was casualties because somebody wouldn't come back. We had very little to do with the Americans. We knew they were there. But it was at this time that I realised that the Americans had a different philosophy about work than we did. One day, an American Jeep came over, I don't know where they came from, to see if we had a starter motor for a Sherman tank. And we did. And we said, what do you want one for? And it seemed that if they had trouble, they replaced things, whereas we mended them. So we said to them, what's wrong with this starter motor? And we said, we don't know, it doesn't work. So we had a look at it, and all it needed was new brushes. So we repaired it for them, sent them forth happily on their way. But that didn't occur to them. They actually repaired things. They just replaced them. And that's when we realised that they had a different attitude to things. And it seems to be an attitude which is now spread. Because nowadays, with your ordinary car, you don't mend them, you replace it.
So, what happened next then? You were still not much to do on the electrical thing.
No. We were travelling forward. We was as squadrons, sometimes as troops. We were going forward all the time. And this went, we did this all through July. And in towards the end of July, we came to a place called Lea. The IRE.
What about the actions in July? Were you aware of them from your perspective?
We knew there was actions going on. But me, I wasn't concerned with them. I wasn't engaged with them. As I said to you just now, on the 18th, I always remember the date, the 18th of July, my mate, Lance Corporal Jack Anderson, bought it. I don't know how, what happened. I just know he got killed on that day. I know his tank never came back. I think it's the whole of it crew got done.
This would be, that's Goodwood, isn't it?
18th, I don't know, was July, 18th of July? Yes, it was, wasn't it? Goodwood was 18th, 17th, 18th, 19th. Well, yeah, that's right. So that would have been Goodwood.
And how did you feel when he didn't come back? I mean, that's the first one that you'd really personally known. I mean, how did it affect you?
This particular time, we had come to expect, we knew these things were going to happen. So, yes, we were sorry, but we realised there's nothing we could do about it, and we just had to accept it. But as I said, he was the first one of my friends who had really bought it. Now, I've lost friends in the Middle East, you know, gone away from the York Hussars and being killed, but that was different because they had left us completely, whereas Jock was still with us.
This is Jock Anderson. Mm. And what about, that day, they lost tens of tanks, so 25, 30 tanks, didn't they? I mean, more.
We lost all of them. I think we lost more than our establishment.
And how did that affect your work? I mean, you had no tanks. Or were you busy reclaiming tanks?
We were busy then, in some cases, reclaiming tanks. So that was done more by recovery crews than even by us, although we did work on it when they came back. But it was to check on tanks which we were getting from reinforcements, because as the reinforcements down the road, we just go back and get more tanks. There always seem to be tanks coming from somewhere.
And so
and
how
we
would
have to check them.
How would you go about checking a reinforcement tank? What were you looking for?
Basically very little. Just make sure everything worked.
And would it?
I never ran against one that didn't.
Were they well built, Sherman tanks?
As I said to you before, I don't think they were built for the convenience of the people working on them. I think they were built for the convenience of the manufacturers. But yes, they were quite well built.
You weren't discovering any faults that were coming up in action?
Yeah, they weren't so well armoured as we thought they were.
In what way?
Well, you tend to think of tanks as being well armoured, and then you see a Sherman as we did, where a shell had gone straight to my friend and then coming straight at the back end, and just giving a neat, clean hole all the way through. And we found out that they burnt very easily. If you got hit, if a tank was hit, you got out quickly. Because it would catch fire then quickly, or if it didn't catch fire, then the next one would make it catch fire. So you got it very, very quickly.
Why did they catch fire more easily than other tanks, would you say?
I think because this is a purely personal view. They were petrol tanks, and they used aircraft fuel, high-octane fuel.
And what did other tanks use?
Some of them used ordinary petrol, you know. A lot of tanks were that time of diesel. In fact, we did eventually get a few diesel Shermans. But the tanks we had, the Shermans we had, were powered by, I think it was 5 Pratt & Whitney aerial aircraft engines, mounted in tandem. And the petrol tanks were vulnerable. We found that the American armour plating was soft. Armour plating varies. And we found that the British tanks, although they were not so heavily armoured, the armour plating tended to be stronger. It didn't give way. German armour plating was very hard, but it tended to be brittle. If something would hit the outside of a German tank, it wouldn't penetrate, but it knocked splinters off the inside. You find with the same thickness of armour plate on an American tank, it would penetrate. And I think that was one of the reasons that it used to get this vulnerability. Germans called Sherman tanks and General Grant's Tommy Cookers for obvious reasons.
Was there a fear of burning to death in the tank and brewing up?
Yes, there was. Yes, there was. Must be. I mean, it didn't worry me. I wanted in tanks. But I mean, it must have worried people. People wouldn't be human if they weren't worried about things like that. Yes, they must have been scared. Must have been worried about it. Anyway, things were going along nicely, and we were going forward the whole time. We didn't stay stuck anywhere for very long.
This is after Goodwood.
Yeah, and we just moved forward little bits at a time, and although I was in B squadron, we weren't necessarily the tanks we were nearest to wouldn't necessarily be B squadron tanks. And in the beginning of August, we pushed forward a bit, and you must understand that the position was very fluid. We didn't know where we were, we weren't sure where the Germans were. They might be in front of us. We know they're going to be behind us. And we'd be partly cut off or whatever. We just don't know. Anyway, we got into the beginning of August and got to this village called Vire. At least that's how we pronounced it.
How did you spell it?
V-I-R-E. And we were in this field, just waiting, doing nothing, just sitting there waiting for something to do. And there's a couple of our tanks on the edge of the field. And somebody came in one day in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock one afternoon, and said, "There's a tank from my squadron over there. They can't get their charger to work. Will you go over?" So I took my tools over there, got into the tank.
So that's not one of your tanks?
Wasn't one of my tanks, it's my squadron's.
But there's no question of job.
No job differentiation. So I went across to do it, got into the tank, and the crew got out. And it was nothing to worry about. It was only a loose wire on magneto. It's the petrol battery charger. You know, we had a little petrol charger then. Because when you're stuck, you don't run the engine all the time to keep the batteries going when you're stuck in one place. Because you want to get away, so we started up with general batteries. This, anyway, that's all it was, just a loose wire on the magneto, because I need magneto ignition on those chargers. And I did it, and all these my tools were scattered over the bottom of the tank. The tank crew got out to have a quick smoke while I was doing it, and they were underneath, and suddenly they realised The Germans were behind us, as well as in front of us.